Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Today we'll be talking with a clinical psychologist on the topic of sex and teens, what they know, what they do, what should their parents do, and what they need to do to become more informed as they grow into adulthood. Dr. Barbara Greenberg is an expert on numerous topics relating to parenting teens, communication, love, and family. Dr. Greenberg specializes in the treatment of adolescents and their well-intentioned parents. I love that. She maintains her full-time private practice in Fairfield County, Connecticut. She is the co-author of Teenage as a Second Language, A Parent's Guide to Becoming Bilingual, and writes regularly for several publications, including Psychology Today and the Huffington Post. You can often find Dr. Greenberg sharing her advice on Good Morning America, Nightline, Katie's Take with Katie Couric, CNN, and HLN. So welcome.
Hello. So nice to talk with you today.
So let's start with some current trends. I'm a little foggy about where things are at. My children are younger than teen years and into adulthood. So are kids having more or less sex, unprotected sex, bi-gender sex, earlier or later sex? What can you tell me about this current generation?
It's very, very interesting what's happening. The kids these days are having sex in sort of a different kind of way. We now have the hookup culture. And what this refers to is teens are connecting with other teens physically and trying not to form an emotional attachment. And that has been very difficult for them, because as we know, it's almost impossible to make a physical connection without an emotional connection. And I don't know exactly why that started, but there's all kinds of vocabulary around that. And it's problematic. A lot of teens get very confused. However, what's been happening, I think, since 1995, and I've been looking at the statistics for this, if most young people are having sex later than they did in the mid-90s, even though most young people have had sex by the time they're 17, they're waiting longer. And in the 90s, it was earlier, about 14 or 15 years old.
Before we go forward, I need to go back for a second. Where would they get the model of having a connection that is, in truth, intimate and usually does involve feelings, if they're really only hooking up? Who are they modeling this behavior from?
I think they're modeling it from one another. I think teens form trends. We know that. And it's very hard to say who the earliest role model was for this hookup culture. But I know that this has been going on for at least a decade because I've been working with teens for three decades. And, for example, when I was a teen, we'd have a date, and a guy would pick me up with a car, and he would take me maybe to the movies or out to dinner. Teens these days, it's very rare for them to date. What they do is they're either hooking up with somebody, that means that they see them at a party and they kiss or they have some kind of physical interaction, or they're having a thing with each other, which means that they both like each other, but it's not acknowledged as a relationship, or they are exclusive, but it's very uncommon for them to use the words dating or going out with each other. And even in college, it's much less frequent for teens to be dating.
So is my reaction, which is almost disbelief, generational, or do I have cause for worry?
It is a cause for concern. And we know that we're raising a generation now with a lot of anxiety. Most college students, for example, who present to the college clinics are presenting with anxiety. I see many, many kids in my practice, and these are not just girls, these are boys too, who have, using their language, hooked up with somebody on a Saturday night at the party, and then are really in deep despair on Saturday when that person doesn't talk with them. We need to teach in our health classes that sexuality and emotionality go hand in hand. We're not cut off. The body and the head are not cut off at the neck. I'm afraid that in health education classes, we're not teaching about the body-mind connection. Body, mind, and heart, I like to say.
The scientific end of it, where it's the chemical thing causes the emotional thing.
That's right. That's right. The body releases chemicals that make people feel more connected during certain aspects of sexuality. That's exactly right.
For the listener, we are joined today by my co-producer, Denny Young, who's also commenting on this conversation. I need to take a deep breath, actually, because I did not expect you to say what you just said. Tell me a little bit about what are some of the misconceptions about this group, and what are some of their truths other than that? Or is that just the predominant factor and the driving force behind what's happening in today's high schools and today's colleges?
I'll tell you the positive first. And the positive is that kids are waiting a little bit longer to have intercourse. And our teens these days are more likely to use condoms. Our teen birth rates have declined in recent decades. So those are two excellent facts, because I really don't think 13, 14, and 15-year-olds are ready to handle sex. What is happening, on the other hand, and something that is a cause for concern, is that kids are very confused about intimacy, and they have tried to separate physical and emotional intimacy. And that is a very, very hard thing for anybody at any age to do. So we have a culture that's either called the hookup culture among teens and college students, or the friends with benefits culture. Now, we couldn't be expected to really sort that out, nor can we expect our teens to do that. So I'm seeing a lot of depression around relationships and hookups. And we should not focus on the girls. In fact, many, many boys initially come to therapy because of deep disappointments about what they had hoped for in terms of relationships.
Is there some lack of modeling from their parents? Or are there chemical issues of mental illness that fuel any of these fires?
I see it a little bit differently. I think that what is happening is there are many, many parents who avoid talking to their kids about sex because they sort of, I know it's an uncomfortable conversation, but I feel that a lot of parents feel erroneously that if they don't talk about it, it's not happening, right? If we just simply avoid it, maybe it won't happen. However, I think we are not teaching our kids about the heart, the body, and the mind. We're teaching our kids instead about birth control, about STDs, maybe about our values about sex, the mechanics of sex, but I think the emotionality of it is left out of most school curricula. And I don't necessarily think parents are modeling this sort of sexuality. I certainly hope not. But I think they're leaving out an important component.
I know you said that they are having intercourse later, but
that's right.
My understanding on the street is that they're actually having much more oral sex.
That's absolutely correct. They're having oral sex much earlier than past generations. I haven't seen data on that, and I don't think you'd get good self-report on that. But oral sex has also been referred to as the new bar mitzvah present.
Ugh.
In fact, I wrote an article for Psychology Today about that, and I had a lot of people write in about that, right? Because in the past, oral sex was seen as more intimate than intercourse, and now it's seen as less intimate. And yes, it is happening in the middle schools. People ask me all the time, what's in it for the girls? And I talk to the girls, and I think what's in it for them is that their friends are doing it, and they want to fit in. Secondly, they're testing their sexuality. That makes them feel powerful.
So aren't there any additional risks associated, like
of
STDs?
Of course.
Yeah.
They can get STDs from oral sex. I don't think
sure.
they're being taught that either.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think when they're being taught about sex in school, I don't think oral sex is very unlikely that oral sex is being touched upon. And it's very risky. And they see it as not risky because they see it as that they can't get pregnant that way. And secondly, they can still call themselves virgins. Right?
So in your crystal ball, what would you like to see parents do? At what age would you like to see them start talking with kids? And what would you hope that the school systems would do?
Oh, I love that question. Thank you for asking me that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the dialogue about sexuality and relationships should start as soon as the kids start asking questions. If they start asking you questions at 9 or 10 about sexuality, start talking to them about it, but at a level that they can understand. Then, when they get a little bit older, add more information. And as you talk to your children about sexuality, talk to them about the heart and the connection and the relationship between physicality and feelings. I would love to see that in the home. And I would love to see that in all of the health classes.
With the freeness associated with baby boomers and the sex that they had during the 60s and 70s, why wouldn't this generation of parents be better willing and able to discuss the issue? And why do they seem to avoid the topic?
Because, think about it, yes, it was a much freer generation. Nonetheless, we're talking about their children now. And even if they were kind of a little free, a little more free-spirited, the birth control pill became popular. Nobody wants to imagine their children in that sort of physical entanglement. No matter how free anybody has been with their sexuality, it's just very uncomfortable, viscerally, to imagine your kids in that sort of entanglement. Just as it's equally hard for kids to think about their parents being sexually active. Ask any teenager about their parents being sexually active, and they'll tell you how grossed out they are.
What are some of the pluses and minuses associated with having that sex talk? And in real time, how would you like them to approach this? Now, you told me what age if they start asking questions and you answer it. But would you like parents to come prepared with books, with manuals, with their personal anecdotes, with scientific facts, or just something less complicated?
Something less complicated. I'd like parents to, when kids are young, just really start, let the kids know that there will be an open dialogue in the house, that they are not going to be yelled at or judged for any topic that they want to bring up, that anything can be discussed in the home without criticism. And I would like parents just to bring themselves to this conversation. I don't think they have to come fortified with books. I think, yes, later on, you know, they can get their kids' books because kids will want to read some of these books in private and leave the books lying around the house. And if kids are interested, they will pick them up. But parents, I don't even think they necessarily need to talk about their own experiences. It's not about them. It's about the kid. Ask the kids what they know about sex, because we often make assumptions that they know a lot more than they actually do. Ask them what they know and ask them what they would like to know. And use media opportunities to talk about it. Maybe watch something like Teen Moms with them, and that will start a dialogue. If you see an article about teen sex, maybe cut it out and talk to them about it. Teens love to provide their opinions about things. I think making it about a third person initially is a wonderful way to start a dialogue.
We're talking today with clinical psychologist Dr. Barbara Greenberg about a wide range of topics regarding sex and teens. I'm reminded about how, for many of us, pot was the thing that inhibited a lot of our fears and allowed us to just do what we wished to do and not maybe think about it. I think that that's been replaced with alcohol. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
So then the infusion of alcohol and the proliferation of alcohol parties on every level just provide the greatest framework for all of this, correct?
Absolutely. Alcohol is very disinhibiting. And yes, and that's very concerning too. Kids black out. Kids aren't free to really give consent if they're very intoxicated. The alcohol worries me tremendously.
It's easier to date rape with alcohol, too.
That's exactly right. And the incidence of date rape, it's a tremendous issue on college campuses.
Let's get back to the topic of depression. Does this in and of itself foster depression? Or the experiences, do they push to the forefront the possibility of mental illness in a lot of children or manic depression?
So I wouldn't say that a breakup would necessarily trigger something like bipolar disorder. I will tell you, though, that I ran an inpatient adolescent unit for 21 years, and for a child who or an adolescent, a teen who is already prone to depression, a breakup of a long-term relationship, if kids get into a long-term relationship, will continue to trigger depression. Now, hookups can trigger some feelings of dysthymia, of sadness. I don't know, you know, if hookups gone awry will necessarily trigger a major episode of depression, but for a child who is already needy and who is looking for a connection and experiences a series of disappointments, which is a series of hookups where they haven't connected, I think absolutely that can trigger depression, anxiety, feelings of lack of self-worth for males and females.
And what kind of therapy might you use on someone who is experiencing these mm-hmm. lows following either a sexual encounter, a
right.
relationship? What would you do?
I work with all my kids on making friends with people, making friends with the opposite sex or the same sex, if that's their preference, before they start to get involved in hookups. And the kids go away to college. I talk to them about waiting at least a couple of months and getting to know somebody before they hook up with them. Not hooking up with people when they're drunk, getting to know somebody when they're sober. I put a lot of emphasis on their respecting their bodies and their emotions, and the kids really do better with that, and they like it.
And what about kids who come to you after the fact? So now mm-hmm. they're beset with STDs or any number of infections.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're now working after the fact.
Okay.
How do you clean that up?
To use it as a teaching opportunity, really.
Yeah.
That they get themselves treated, they get more information, and we talk about what happened and how they can lead their lives in the future. Anything, you know, we learn the most from our mistakes, and kids do follow suit.
So what kind of courage does it take to save your virginity these days and choose not to have that much or any oral sex in a committed relationship? Does it ever happen?
It's rough for the kids, because what the high school kids talk about is wanting to lose their V card. They call it their virginity card. And they feel a tremendous amount of pressure to fit in with the crowd and lose their V card. And I've had many boys who have come in and told me that they weren't ready to lose their virginity, but they felt pressured and made fun of by their friends for being virgin.
What do you do when you've kind of blown that one most important private personal thing?
Mm-hmm.
How do you recuperate from that?
Well, I always talk to the kids, and I always try to reframe things for kids and put a different spin on things. And if they emotionally and psychologically want to reclaim their virginity, they can do that.
Oh, I love that. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the tips you would provide them with?
So I tell them, you know, they don't have to define themselves as a virgin or not a virgin, but if they want to, and they're upset about having lost their virginity, they can sort of clean the slate and call themselves emotional virgins, or they can put any kind of spin on that. If they want to be virgins again, they can. They don't have to be so technical here, and they really, really do like that.
I like a non-judgmental approach. I love that.
That's
as a matter of fact.
Right. Yeah. And they don't have to. And I always try to teach the teens to become more compassionate with themselves, and not to be so self-flagellating. Some of them do get involved in sexual relationships when they're 14 or 15, and I really don't see good outcomes there. It's way too young. And I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I wouldn't have said that, but now I've seen so many teenagers, and I haven't really seen good outcomes. It's just way too young. It's way too intimate. Kids can't handle it.
Tell me a little bit about the experimentation that kids are doing these days. Are they welcoming same-sex experiences, multiple partners, multiple people in the same room? Is there anything different about this generation?
I don't think it's multiple partners in the same room. I think, though, what there is a little bit more of is experimenting with different sex, same-sex partners, little more sexual fluidity.
How come?
Why? Maybe because we're talking about it more. It seems more acceptable.
And do you feel like this is new to this generation?
It seems that way to me. Well, unless it wasn't being talked about in the past, but teens, when you talk to them, they really, once they start talking, they really do tell you things. Yes, I think it is new to this generation. As we felt freer back in the 70s with sexuality, I think they feel freer experimenting with partners of different sexes.
Tell me a little bit more about the differences between the baby boomer trends, the Gen X, the Gen Y, the millennials, and mm-hmm. teens. What do you see for each of those groups?
Mm-hmm. So the baby boomers were more about just experimenting sexually and having multiple partners. And I think the Gen X, Gen Y, and the millennials are, I don't think they're experimenting with a greater number of partners, but I think they're more likely to be comfortable with their sexuality, whether or not they're gay or straight. And they have more, they still have a long way to go, but there's more acceptance. And I think they're more likely to experiment, you know, like I said earlier, with male or female partners.
Do you think the advent of same-sex partnerships or civil unions has any bearing on this?
Oh, yes, because it's in the media all the time, and kids are very aware of what's going on around them, particularly if it's media-driven. Absolutely.
So if teens no longer have something like Playboy, although mm-hmm. there are plenty of other magazines,
right.
but, I mean,
Play
it just
porn.
Doesn't have mm-hmm. the same... It doesn't have the same weight that it used to have. But there is a lot of online porn. How does that meet these teenagers now that online usage is at such a high?
How does it meet their usage?
Because they can get on the internet without their parents seeing sometimes what they're doing, because they have the advantage of sometimes having a computer in their room. I mean, not to say that there aren't parents who aren't watching, but they no longer have to sneak the magazine under their bed.
They do have to sneak the porn sites because they show up on the child's history.
Okay.
And that's something that the parents should be aware of.
Of course.
Because there's a lot of concern about some of these porn sites where they're very misogynistic and where the women are treated very aggressively. I think that if you see your kids watch porn, talk to them about that. That's much of it is not really a good model of what should go on sexually.
And do you think that social media encourages that type of behavior?
I don't think social media encourages that kind of misogynistic sexual behavior. I think some of the porn sites do.
And how about sexting? And there have been so many scandals about teens. Talk to me a little bit about that. How do you find that?
Well, I'll tell you, a very high percentage of kids are sexting. Females are more likely to send photos, and males are more likely to receive them. I think when kids feel anonymous, and they feel anonymous when they're sending electronic messages, when they feel anonymous, they behave in a more sexual way and in a more aggressive way than when they're making eye contact and when they're with somebody. So I think social media lends itself very well to sexting. And what happens with the young girls is that if older teen boys like them and dare them to send pictures, they will act on a dare. The sexting is often a group activity. And the boys these days are actually sending pictures of their genitals to the girls also. A lot of the schools have had people in telling the kids to delete these pictures because they actually are porn, especially if they're sent to younger kids. There's a lot of disinhibition about this now. And some of the messages that the kids send each other are very, very racy. And the kids don't understand the full impact of what they're saying and the full impact of their pictures on the kids that they're sending them to.
After the fact, the large majority of these kids must feel enormous shame.
Enormous shame. One girl who I was seeing sent out naked pictures of herself, and the next day she came to school, and some of the boys who had never seen a naked girl were very surprised. They didn't know that girls had so much pubic hair, and she was being made fun of for weeks, and she eventually switched schools. There is a tremendous amount of shame. Once the pictures start getting sent from one person to another, we really need to educate our kids about how quickly these messages travel. Because in their room, when they're sending out a picture, they think that this picture is just going to one person and staying there. That's not the case. These pictures travel. One thing you can be sure of is that teens will be sharing these sexting messages because it's a form of social currency. Look what I have to show you. Just like adults use gossip as a form of social currency, sexting is almost a new form of teen gossip.
We're running out of time, and I'd like to know what one tip would you like to leave the listener with today?
That parents be mindful of what your kids are doing and how they're spending their free time, and pay attention to their moods, pay attention to their behavior, and try to stay connected to your teens. Because more than anything else, they do want to talk. There is research that shows that teens want to talk to their parents, believe it or not, even though they may act as if that's the last thing in the world that they want to do. The truth is that they do want to talk to their parents, and they do want their parents around. They just want to talk on their own terms. So if you bring up a subject with your teen and your teen says, "Not now, Mom or Dad," say, "Okay, come find me later when you're ready to talk." Give them second chances.
We've just spent a great half hour talking with clinical psychologist Dr. Barbara Greenberg about the wide-ranging topic of sex and teens. Dr. Greenberg can be found at drbarbaragreenberg.com and on Twitter at ParentTeenDoctor. Thank you so much, Barbara, for joining us today.
Pleasure.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. I'm joined today by co-producer Denny Young. And until next time, I hope you take care.